Welcome to The Story Field. This is a podcast created and sponsored by the Allen Firm. This is Josh Allen, and I'm joined by Micah Petrie. I think you'll agree that life is complex, business is hard, and living a life of faith can feel complicated. We know it's discouraging when movement in your life or business or faith has stopped. Well, you're in the right place to hear some great stories of normal people just like us who will inspire you to move forward in life. So thank you for joining us today. We know you're going to be encouraged. Today is going to be a great show because I have Nick Cooper on. So Nick is somebody I consider really a great friend and somebody I deeply respect. And he's right now, Nick, you're serving as the client service manager of Park Hill. Is that right? And they're engineers and architects?
Yep. Architecture engineering firm. We've got 15 offices across Texas, Oklahoma, and New Mexico.
Wow. So you have some stuff to do. And then right now, so you're involved in the faith-based division. What does that mean?
Yeah. So our company's pretty diverse. If it's vertical or horizontal, I like to say we're probably involved in it in some capacity, but a small part of that pie is our church division or faith-based division. And so I get to help heading that up, and that's where I spend all of my time there with the company. Okay. Our company tagline is building community. And so that's one of our company's ways of saying, hey, we're building the community by being the service and these partners with these churches.
Okay. And that's interesting because just a little more background on Nick. Nick has started a adventure ministry called iDisciple Ministries, or IDM for short, like everybody calls it. You've planted a church in Norman, Oklahoma, which is still going great. You've been involved in starting many college ministries throughout the years. So, you know, you've been a busy man, and now you've landed back, you know, in kind of your engineering world, which we're going to get into, doing stuff for ministries. So it's pretty cool.
I got, you know, I like it when you say it like that, Josh. It makes me sound a lot more exciting than I probably deserve. But thanks, let's keep doing that. That feels good. Yeah.
Well, let's start with Park Hill and your current role and kind of some projects you're working on, and then we can back it up a little bit.
Sure. Yeah. So one of the guys that I work with is a tremendous friend of the faith and happens to be my boss now. His name's Scott Nelson. And Scott and I have remained close since we were in the same Bible study group in college. And he is a principal at Park Hill, one of the principals. And he spent the first 15 years of his career just building churches. And so we always remained close with what was going on in the nation and the trends and what we saw God doing through the church. And so long story short is we ended up deciding that maybe a partnership was needed for me to come help him guide that and allow me to still be connected in ministry and answer the call that God has in my life to reach people in that capacity. And so I was trained as a construction engineer and so went right into ministry. And so this was that thing where it just kind of meshed my two worlds collided, my school world and then my calling all kind of morphed together into this neat opportunity I have. So they allow me to do trips that, as you referenced, that ministry we'll talk about, but we get the opportunity to work with some of the nation's largest churches. And, it's really exciting. From the standpoint of getting to be around some of these sharp minds and these visionaries. But also, I mean, we're doing a couple church plants as well. And so they've really given me the freedom to just really find that way that we can connect and be a service to the body and to the community that body is serving. And so it's a pretty unique situation that they've given me a lot of freedom in that, but genuinely good men and women that lead the company, many of them of the faith. And so they have a soft spot in their hearts for this type of work. And again, it's a small part of what the company does, but it is my part. It's what I focus on.
And that's interesting. So you graduated high school. So I'm going to back up a little bit down in the Houston area. And then you went to Texas Tech. Good man. So what made you go there? And you said you got your engineering degree. So walk us through that a little bit.
Yeah, I wish I had some tremendous faith story. I always hear these podcasts or sermons where somebody talks about God, you know, shined a light on them on the road and they were blinded. Oh, that was in the Bible. But I was supposed to go to Arkansas. I've got a lot of family there. Had an uncle who worked as one of the deans of engineering up there, and had a roommate, and had already talked about who was bringing the mini fridge and who was bringing the microwave. And I was fishing with a friend of mine named Brent Page in high school as a senior. And Brent just said, "Hey, I'm going to Tech. I need a roommate. Do you want to come?" And I went, "Sure." And that was it. And I just shifted. I came home, put my backpack down, and told my mom, I said, "I'm going to Tech, by the way." And that was it. And luckily you could see God actually looking out for me with that, because of all the things that changed and happened in my life at Tech. But I wasn't necessarily aware of that, and I wasn't necessarily interested in what he might say about that. I was kind of making my plan, and he protected me. So
that was a well thought out decision. Took about a split second to change it. Yeah.
Very spiritual. Very spiritual.
So you're going to be, I mean, did you know, like, hey, I want to get into engineering? And you're running cross country for Tech as well, is that right?
Yeah. So I was in cross country in high school, and then when I got there, actually got a little bit better than I was in high school. I ran with some tremendous athletes. A couple of the guys that I ran with were in the Olympics. And so not only was I not tremendous, I was up against some world class athletes. And so long story short is I was running one day on campus, and the coach saw me. And so he made me a pacer for the team, which is code for you're not really good enough to do anything with us, but I like your work ethic.
You're That's like really the rabbit at the horse races.
Yeah.
Right.
Yes. And the problem was they caught me so often, they had to shoot me every day. And so it was, but it was cool to be around that and to have that camaraderie. And that feeling of being connected with that group. And so, yeah, I went as a petroleum engineer, did 2 years of that, and then really felt a specific call to ministry. And I guess we could talk about that more later if you want. But really just my career is supposed to be connected vocationally with the church is how I'd call that call for me.
Yeah.
That's what it was like for me. And we all have a call. We're all ministers. I know that. It was just a unique thing that happened to me. And so changed my degree from knowing how to drill a hole in the earth to knowing how to build something. And then as we referenced earlier, here I am still using it. And the two have blended in my life currently. So
yeah, well, let's talk about that. Like the call, yeah. I mean, I want to go ahead, Micah.
Well, I just want to say real quick. So when you're doing these engineering classes at Tech, did they use Lincoln Logs or Legos? Because I know at Lubbock, I'm just wondering.
There's a joke there about our friends down south that I'll leave on the table, but it's too soon. But if they had used Lincoln Logs and Legos, I would have gotten better grades. I can promise you that.
So let's go back to this call, because like it wasn't like you were in petroleum engineering and then like I'm out of engineering completely. You said engineering, different type of engineering. That's interesting to me.
Yeah. You know, I started walking with the Lord. I had a guy, I joined the church one Sunday, and as a college student, looking back on it, I still don't quite know why or how I did that. I just found myself walking down an aisle, and then there was a minister that met me named John Strapazon. And I thought to myself, I have nothing to say to you. I don't even want to be here. Why am I doing this? Why am I walking down this aisle? And Strap, as we affectionately called him, said, good morning. How can I help you? What decision do you want to make? And the only thing I could get out of my mouth was, I want to join the church, which I didn't, but I was already there and committed. And I couldn't dive into the pew, like I'd been spotted. And he was already walking towards me. And so, he was excited I joined. Anyway, they still did the receiving line at First Baptist in Lubbock and the college service that I was in. So I was in the line, and this guy named Scott Donahoe came by, and this is pre-cell phone, and so Scott comes by and he's really excited, like probably overly excited, I thought, and he said, "Do you want to get together this week and read the Bible?" And I, of course, thought, absolutely not. Like, why? Who would do that? So I said, yes. And All I could think of was I just won't be there when he said he was going to be there. And so he set up a time with me in my dorm room, to which I was not there. I happened to be at the rec center. And to my surprise, the guy had no life, and I came back an hour and a half late, and he's still waiting for me. And I just thought, what a loser. Why go away? And he acted as though it was the time I was supposed to be there. Looking back, had total grace in dealing with such a chump in myself. But he started reading with me. Anyway, we just read a chapter of John each week that we met. And I tried to skip out a few weeks, and he was just relentless. Anyway, after a number of weeks, I can't tell you exactly how many, six, eight, he told me I needed to start discipling someone. And at that point, those were words that were foreign, and I'd kind of developed a friendship with him. He's a pretty cool guy. I actually liked reading the Bible. I'd never done that. I mean, I'd heard Bible studies. I had heard sermons. Yeah, I grew up in the church, but I'd never had somebody just sit down and read it with me. And the goal was we would read it, discuss it. And we always talked about, don't try to tell me what it means. Just tell me what it says. And that was huge for me. I was always trying to figure out what it meant. And he kept saying, just what does it say? And so I'd almost repeat what the verse exactly said. And I felt stupid for that, but that was actually what started being powerful in my life, was we would take something that we saw that the Bible said in that week's study, and we would try to apply it to our lives that week. And he kept seeing, see if God does something with it. And whether it was an action I would take in character, you know, in language or in the way I treated people, mm-hmm. or whether it was an action that that we were going to look for God to take, was God protecting us in some way this week? Or, you know, did we notice him in some way because we were looking for him? Anyway, he just said, I want you to start discipling somebody. And I told him I wasn't ready for that. I didn't even know what that meant. And as I'm saying all of that, it kind of dawned on me, like, what have you been doing to me? You know, like, is this what you've been using me to disciple me? You're a horrible person. And I remember saying that to him, you know, like you manipulated the situation by reading the Bible with me. What a terrible thing to do. Anyway, he was bold enough to say this phrase to me. He said, well, here's the deal. You find somebody to read the Bible with and disciple each week, or you and I will stop meeting. And I thought, the nerve of this guy, that he is going to stake our friendship, that I thought was genuine, but obviously it's not. I thought it was genuine, and he's going to stake our friendship on whether or not I do something with somebody else. What a loser. And so I thought about it and decided that I like spending time with Scott so much that I would find somebody to read the Bible with so that I could keep meeting with Scott, because I thought he was cool. And so that was the first time that I would say the word discipleship, and my faith began to grow. Through that, I would say my call came. Not just through discipleship, but through that experience of actually starting that one-on-one relationship with the Lord in a way that made sense to me. That's where I started feeling the tug on my heart of, hey, you're good with people and you're good at this Bible thing. And I really felt like I was saying, I'd really like to use you this way for a living. So,
man, that's awesome. I remember I wasn't, you know, I've been a Christian for probably 15 years. So I didn't want to go to church. I didn't want to do all these things. And it just so happened that when we moved back to Austin, this church plant was across the street in an elementary school. They had been open maybe 6 or 7 months. And my wife was like, man, let's go check it out. So we roll in and they do the music and everything. And I'm a sound guy. At this time, I had just graduated from audio engineering. And I'm like, man, okay, so they're kind of rocking and stuff, but the sound in here is horrible. And apparently my wife had gone a couple of weeks before and told the pastor and all this that she was going to bring me, and that I had this sound engineer. So, of course, I was like vultures as soon as they met me, and they were like, hey, maybe you can help us out. Uh-huh. Blah, 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 blah. So, of course, the next week I'm running sound and that's how my ministry started. And I always call that like Jesus wearing you down. because we did two services at the time, and I had no interest in being knowing anything about Jesus, knowing the Bible or anything. But listening to basically all Sunday, listening to two sermons, and then about 3 months, 4 months, 5 months into it, you're like, oh, man, he's got a point there. Oh, that makes that makes a little sense. Maybe I should treat my wife a little better. Oh, you mean I'm supposed to hang out with my kids and be an example for them? Oh, maybe I should do that. So I always tell Pastor Cole that Jesus wore me down through your preaching. And I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing, but, you know.
Yeah, that's awesome, Micah. Thanks for sharing that, too. Hey, Nick, I want to get back to you for a second, like the discipleship, because that's a word people use a lot in the faith circles. But, like, I think you maybe are one of the people who've actually put some just simplicity and legs on it. So I know through the college ministries you guys have started, like, how do you guys define that? Like give me the chewable version of what it means to just go make a disciple who disciples somebody.
Yeah. First of all, I'm glad that that's a word that people at least are hearing. Whether or not they do it in the way that I define it or not, I'm glad that at least that word is more noticeable now. I think growing up in the church, I think the first time I heard anything besides the word disciples, the first time I heard discipleship was in college with Scott. And so I would say this, Josh, when I was a lot younger, I had a lot more about the Bible figured out than I do now. I know a lot less than I used to. And I used to hear people say that and I'd laugh and think, no way, well, I get it now. So I would say this, that you can have a rigid structure if you're a structured person, and you can have a loosey-goosey structure if you're not. Anything that gets you being consistent and being in talking about the faith, in reading the word, and in it becoming actionable in your life. So what it looks like for me personally is I got a couple guys. I still do the same thing that I was taught. I just try to read. I do this with my son, Daniel. We read a proverb of the day. And so today being the ninth is the ninth proverb. It's just an easy way for him to keep up. But we read a chapter of the Bible. As we read, what stands out? Is there anything that we can put to action, whether it's an action we take or it's an action we can look for the Lord to be taking on our behalf or to us? And we just look for it throughout the day. And so I meet once a week with guys, and that's there's no magic formula, I wouldn't say. That's what works for me. I've seen it work a lot for other people. I would say this, if you struggle with parameters, you know, being boxed into something, it probably help you to set a very weekly meeting or a bi-weekly meeting and have it a set time. Because if you don't, you're going to push it here and it's going to skip a week and it'll be 6 weeks before you're back together. And if you are super rigid, you may not do as much prep work, and you may invite the Holy Spirit to be in your reading with each other over Zoom or over coffee, when we used to get in real life person with one another. And so I just think that consistent connection point of with one another and of the word, and then of looking for God to be at work is that formula that seems to work well for me. And I've seen it work for others as well.
That's helpful. And it doesn't have to look, you may not look like me or vice versa. I mean, like Micah in his example, I know him, and with his audio and the worship team and stuff like that, like he's doing that in a different way. But I've seen him do that, with those guys if we never come across.
Well,
but
you know,
maybe at practice.
Life is busy. And so I take guys, I've taken guys to the grocery store to do our discipleship time. Like, I got to go grocery shopping and you can just come along. And I've genuinely had people argue with me about that's not discipleship, and that's okay. I used to be more interested in arguing about it. Now I'm just more into like, look, we read the Bible or we talked about this verse and asked the Lord to show us something and unpackage some things about our life. And that was valuable to both of us. Mm. And it encouraged our faith. And so I'm not really necessarily into arguing about right and wrong on it as much as I am. Works for me. I think the key is if you got something that works for you, you better work the plan, man. Work it.
Yeah. Yeah. That's good. Okay. So at some point you started working with John Randles. Like, we have to cover some of that. Like, we have to. So tell us about John Randles. Tell us kind of how that happened. And then,
yeah, John Randles, tremendous communicator, maybe the best communicator I've ever heard in my life. It was communicated, connected to me. I don't think I ever went somewhere with John and he didn't know someone anywhere in the nation. He's the most known, unknown evangelist ever. John passed away 5 years ago now or so from cancer at a pretty young age. He was 55 or 60 in that range there. John was an ex-offensive lineman with a PhD in ancient history. So, I mean, that puts it in perspective for you. This sports jock that had a PhD in ancient history. So when he would teach the Bible, he would teach about what was going on in the political scene in Rome at the time Paul was writing this, and bring that all together. And it was another one of those guys that just connected the Bible in a way that had not heard it before, and not connected with it before, that there's a reality of history and the Bible's reality of history mesh, and they're the same history. And so it kind of made it real to me. But John was a guy that was booked 51 and a half weeks a year. Three or four days he was not booked were because his wife and kids and I plotted to book him for a phantom booking, you know, and they would be there. But he just was, I would say this, John beat his body and John made it his slave. And he wasn't going to miss an opportunity for somebody to get saved or go deeper in their faith because he wasn't working hard. And I really appreciated that about him and just the way that he carried himself and the way that he taught. I think there's a lot of people that he's a hero to a lot of their faith.
So what was your, how did you get involved with him though? Like, was he part of the First Baptist? Like, what were you doing with him? How'd you get involved with him?
Yeah. So like Micah said, with his sound stuff. So John was speaking at a thing called Paradigm in Lubbock, and Paradigm started at the same time as Matt Chandler started a thing called Grace in Abilene. So we had met, kind of connected up about what he was doing, what we were doing. Ironically, now one of the churches I'm getting to work with is Matt Chandler's church here at Park Hill. And so kind of fun to have come full circle with him in some of that. But, John spoke at Paradigm and Paradigm began to grow. And, I was working at First Baptist for John Strabzon as an intern and my time came up there, but, I wanted to kind of stick around and keep going, and Strap wanted me to stick around. John needs somebody to help him, Randles. And, so he managed to set up a meeting between the two of us, and John's first thing, he looked at me and he said, "Hey man, you make websites?" And I went, "Yes, I do. You remember that old Bud Light commercial about Mr. Gallywegix?" And he walks up to the driver and says, "Yes, I am Mr. Gallywegix." And the driver says, "Mr. Galakowicz." And the guy goes, "Yeah." That was my exact response. And he's like, "Do you make websites?" And I went, "Yes, I do." Lied, uncontrollably lied, and left that place. Got a book and called my two friends that I knew did that and said, "I have a week to make a website. Can you help?" That was his test for me, was to see, could I come up with something? And so that's how I got in, and he ended up hiring me as kind of his assistant or secretary, whatever you're supposed to say that person is, but really discipled me and partnered with me in the ministry and taught me what it was in the ministry to work hard and still allow God to work. And that's really a lot of what I learned with him.
So, hey, Nick, so John got you really working with him, got you into speaking and preaching, didn't you? I mean, you started off booking his appointments and doing administrative stuff, and next thing you know, you're in the stage in front of people?
Yeah, so he would get so many bookings that he would recommend people, and there'd be a few times that all of his normal recommended people weren't available. And so he would he would call me in from the bullpen, and I kind of viewed his opportunities to get better, but also to kind of prove whether or not I could do this. And so then he ended up kind of coaching and teaching me. And so I got to rub shoulders and do that kind of stuff, and did well enough that, that, you know, he started recommending me more. And then I started getting my own calls. And so that was kind of fun to do, and valuable thing. But John really helped get me in the door with that kind of stuff, mm-hmm. and gave me the confidence to get on a stage and to share a little about what God had done with me and God might be able to do in the lives of others.
Man, that's amazing. Well, so you ended up graduating, and then what was your next step from there? What did you do? Graduating Tech, well, with an engineering degree.
Yeah, went right to work for Randall's and ended up going back to work at First Baptist for their college ministry, and ended up helping start a couple college ministries across the nation. College ministry wasn't really something that was happening. They were kind of that lost group in the church. There was no reason for them to be there. They didn't have any kids to bring. They didn't need friends.
Yeah.
And it's college. I mean, you're not supposed to go to church in college, are you? And so it wasn't a group that the church was particularly focused on either, simply from the standpoint of they're going to go on and be somewhere else. And so, I mean, yes, there's an eternal focus, but do we need to focus on them for our church's sake? And so I got really into it because that's when God changed my life, really changed my life. And so ended up getting to start a couple more ministries at other places, help do that and be involved. I mean,
y'all
were
just,
so
you just started a college ministry. Like, what does it look like?
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah, well, we ended up starting one in Stephenville, Texas, and at your home church, at Tarleton. And, that was a place that, that really had not had a lot in the history besides, maybe, BSM or BSU ministry, Baptist Student Ministries. And I thought they were awesome. It's just, that wasn't my cup of tea. I was more of a churchman, and I liked the feeling of that connectivity. And I really wasn't thinking one was better than the other. I just knew what I was good at. And so, man, it was just a lot of getting on campus and doing exactly that story I already described. Finding people and be like, you want to read the Bible, and finding those suckers that were not strong enough to say no overtly, you know?
But what's the model though? Like, because yeah, that's still my home church, and it went from no college ministry, no college participants, maybe. I mean, you guys have hundreds of people every week, you know, coming and being involved in that. What was the model that worked?
I think they've still got about 400 students that come every Thursday. And that's been 15 years ago we started that. And so for a campus like Tarleton State, that's significant. I mean, that's life-changing. You know, people pray all the time for revival. I hear it a lot. And one of my encouragements to anyone listening here is, if you're going to pray for revival, write down what that is. Because it may happen and you don't give God credit for it. And I would tell you this, we prayed for revival at Tarleton State and it's still going on. Mm-hmm. People are getting saved, people are walking with Jesus, and they're going out and being different people. And so anyway, here's what it looks like, Josh. I think that the thing that our system does that we're good at, is we encourage student leadership. So we set up that one-on-one meeting I was talking about with the discipleship. Well, we kind of set that up through small groups. So we do the 1, the 3, the 12, the 72, and the 140, and that's kind of what we look for, that big group, and then start breaking them down. You know, there was only room for 3 in the garden. There wasn't room for all 12. It was a space issue. So he chose Peter, James, and John. And it references one that he said was the one he loved. And does that mean he was his favorite? No, he spoke against that. But what we do know is when push comes to shove in life, our categories of friends shake down, from Facebook to maybe our neighbors or your small group at your church or your business, and then maybe to a group of smaller friends. But when push comes to shove, you need that one friend. You usually know who that is. And at least I hope you do. And so what we do is we say, hey, we need student leaders that are going to lead other students. And we're going to meet with them each week. And we're going to We're going to have a leaders meeting where we're going to teach them the lesson and let them talk about what God's doing in their lives. And then they're going to go and they're going to unpackage that lesson with a group of students. I'll never forget a pastor asked me one time, how do you have student leaders that don't know enough and are, you know, could say or teach the wrong thing? And I remember my response to him was, it's not that they could say or teach the wrong thing, it's that they will. And it's being close enough to them to allow them to make mistakes and to come back from those mistakes. I mean, I think that's the key.
Man, that's good. So that period of your life when you were involved in at least Stephenville, tell us how that transformed into the Adventure Ministry, iDisciple Ministries, or IDM.
Yeah, well, one of the things with Stephenville is kind of a small town, and there's a lot of diesel pickups that women drive, and so I drove just a regular pickup, and it was tiny. You know, I felt like I was driving a Ford Ranger around that place. But I started hearing guys that would go to Tarleton, and they're not your typical UT student, I would say, if you're going to compare to something, that they'd be slightly different. They're still people. I don't like the whole idea of they're so different. No, they're not so different. They're still college students and people, but they probably wore camo to class, some of them. And I don't know how often that happens in Austin. And I think it should happen more, Micah, just so you know. But
We're working on it. More IDM trips and it'll be fine.
So I started asking guys things like, hey, you want to go fishing? Because there's a lot of opportunity to do that there. And I'd have things like guys would say, I'm not into that. And a lot of that just confused me because I thought, what does that mean you're not into that? Like, I say I'm not into going to the Gap. You know what I mean? Like, I don't want to fall into that place. But how could you not be into, hunting or throwing the baseball or going fishing? I just never understood it. Anyway, what I started realizing was that these guys are really just saying they don't know how to do something. Mm-hmm. A lot of them. I mean, some of them really just didn't like it. And that's okay. I mean, if you don't like stuff, it's fine. You don't have to. But there's some things that I think most of us just kind of like. Road trips. A large majority will like, going camping on a road trip with buddies. Whether you stay in a hotel or in a campground, I don't think it matters. You're just trying to get out and get around. And so I started making it to where, hey, I'm not going to make you feel like an idiot for not knowing how to cast a fishing pole. I don't care if you know how to cast a fishing pole, and it's not a contest. I'm not having a contest on who's better at this. I like it. And I would like to do it with you. And so I started doing discipleship with them fishing, by the way, for any of you who think that's not discipleship, read any of the gospels and how Jesus called his own disciples. Anyway. So I thought these guys are just scared to look like idiots. You know, as men, there's a certain point in life that we realize there's a certain age somewhere around 18 to 20 that we realize I'm not good at something and I'm tired of feeling like an idiot and looking like an idiot for continuing to not be good at it. Or I don't know how to do something. And so I've learned enough to not put myself in a place of looking and feeling dumb. And so we hide behind things like, I'm not into that. We don't say, I don't want to. We just say, oh, I'm not really into that. And that's really, I learned code. So what I started noticing was, I would take guys fishing or on a trip to fish, and they would love it, but they didn't know how to do it. And they would catch that first fish and love it. Some of them didn't, but most were like, this was awesome. I want to do it again. And I started noticing they would come back and be better leaders in their small groups. And I was like, am I making this up? I mean, maybe I'm making this up, but I just started noticing that. And so I started telling other people that, like, man, I had guys getting saved camping and water skiing and road tripping. And I just thought, this is crazy. Or going hiking in Colorado, and I thought their lives were changing, but I couldn't prove it. It was just a feeling. And so I ran across, I started hearing the commercials that we all started hearing 10 or 15 years ago about low T. Remember those commercials? You're probably still hearing them.
Doesn't happen. Doesn't happen to me. I'm fine.
I'm not into that. So I started hearing those commercials and thinking, why did all these show up at one time? And what an awkward thing to hear on the radio. Wow, we are talking about some strange stuff. Anyway, I ran across a study called the Male Aging Study. and I will not bore everyone with it, but I read the study, and effectively what the study said was that a male, an 18-year-old male today, has 50% the testosterone level that his father had at the same age. So when his father was 18, you know, he had so much more than his son at 18. And I started being like, well, okay, that's a chemical thing. Yeah, I get that. So I started studying testosterone. What does it do? It gets a bad rap. You know, we hear about it. It's so terrible and it's made fun of all the time. Well, it was the thing that really allowed men to be men. It's one of those separator drugs that our bodies produce, and it's natural. And it's also the thing that when we were hunter gatherers, it's that thing that allowed you to take a life, and provide. And well, the study even pointed that out, that, hey, in our societies now, we have no need for that. We don't need to do that because we can go to a grocery store. And so I'm not picking on any of that. I go too. But what our bodies are smart, it's kind of like adrenaline, only it's a slow burn adrenaline, in that your body's smart to know when it needs to produce stuff and when it doesn't. And your body says, hey, I don't need this level of this drug because you're not doing these things. It stops producing the same level. Well, that's okay for hunter-gatherer stuff, but it's not okay for things like confidence. It's not okay for things like sexuality. It's not okay for things like leadership and producing well at a job even. And so I started saying, well, we've got a chemical imbalance, and this is some of the stuff I'm seeing in men. Well, as I read and finished the study, one of the conclusions they came to was environmental, the packaging in the food that we eat, you know, processed meats, as well as the things I already discussed. And then the last one was, the body will more naturally produce natural levels of testosterone if a man, and I'm quoting, gets his hands dirty. And I thought, no way. I just loved the idea of all these brains sitting around writing out that statement. You know, people at Harvard sitting down and writing, getting your hands dirty. And I thought, well, that's it. And they were talking about, you know, you get a man's hands. If a man gets his hands dirty, his testosterone levels just in dirt will balance out more evenly for the next 6 months. And I thought, they just proved this? It's crazy. And I realized what I was doing with taking these guys on some of these trips was just that. We're just getting our hands dirty. And I was actually able to say that I could prove that guys were different coming back. I wasn't making it up. It was a chemical change that was transpiring. And so I called up some friends and said, here's the study, gave them the spiel I just gave y'all and said, I want to start a nonprofit. And all I want to do is get men outside. That's it. Let's just get their hands dirty. We can do that in a whole lot of ways. We go to baseball games and, you know, smear our nachos on the floor. We can, and eat them. There's a whole lot of ways we can get dirty, but let's just get men outside and active in a way that gets their hands dirty. And in the process, while we sit around that campfire, let's read the Bible. And so iDisciple was born.
Dude, I tell you what, the trips that I've been on, man, I'm jacked for, you're correct, 4 or 5 months after that, for riding the four-wheelers for 70,000 hours and the fishing and the sleeping next to cows and that come and roll up on your tent at 3 a.m. I mean, there's just something about that. I mean, you come back and you're like, oh, I'm going to get in the garage and I'm going to fix that honeydew thing, or I'm going to make a new workbench, you know, whatever that is. It kind of inspires you to be, you know, kind of caveman.
Yeah. Well, you know, and there's something about providing that safe environment, Micah, where we're not going to make fun of each other for not being professional four-wheeler riders. You know, like, sorry, I don't do it for a living, but doesn't mean I can't have fun. And the other thing is, there's something so cool when you get to look at your wife after you did that, after you hung that picture with that one nail, you know, like I hammered that stinking nail in and hung that picture. There's just something that you look back at her and you're like, are you proud of me?
And yeah, I made it home. I didn't die on that mountain that Nick made us go up.
But there's something unique that happens between the two of you, even when she can look at you and be like, my man hammered that nail in. And it's so stupid,
when you look at its surface, but the reality is, you know, that general that gave that speech, and his name is eluding me now, that said, if you want to change the world, start by making your bed every morning. I mean, it's what discipleship is, man. It's just these little incremental things, and it's not necessarily earth-shattering all the time.
So what does IDM look like now?
Yeah, we've been around for about 11 years. We have two bases of operations in the Ozark Mountains and in Colorado. We actually own equipment in both places, but we own some property in Colorado. We have right around 40 acres in a national forest in southern Colorado, and we have 10 four-wheelers. And we have gear for 10 guys to come camping. And so where they don't have to buy it and bring it. And we teach everybody how to do it. And there's all different levels. And then we go fly fishing at both locations. And really, it's just in the mold of what we talked about. I mean, there's some groups that I read and I'm like, you know what? To go overnight camping for this group is going to push them too far outside of their comfort zone. I mean, being outside your comfort zone is good until you go too far. And so we just stay at the cabin. We'll go ride and come back to the cabin. And then there's some groups that are like, this is a group that if I allowed them would drive the four-wheelers off the mountain. So I'm going to need to be careful here. And so it's just the idea, though, is that we have a theme and that I don't necessarily find myself any longer being the central hub of teaching. What I am is the kind of the initiator of the conversation. And we just like to read the Bible, man. Let's just open the Bible around a campfire or around a fishing rod and just talk. There's no pressure. We're not trying to impress one another. We're not trying to say that the wonderful thing we learned about it. It's just, what does God say in this? And man, it's amazing how 2 hours will go by at the snap of your fingers.
And you're still, we're not talking about only 18 to 24 year olds now. Now we're talking about us 40 year olds. And in our life stage, do we need that too? I mean,
well, I do. I can't speak as scientifically, having not read for that age, although we have moved up into this age group, but I can say I still hear the commercials. So there's got to be something to that. But I think it's really cool because, Josh, one of the things we've done is we've continued to have the 18-year-olds. You know, we still have a couple college trips every year. But now we have, you know, I've got a trip of 60-year-old men. And everything in between. And now we're even talking about father sons, because some of us have sons, you know, and we're like, I would like to teach my son how to fish, even though I don't know how. But I don't want to look like an idiot in front of him. I'd like to have a little basis. And so we kind of take some of that pressure off. Or I'd like to teach him how to set up a tent. You know, like, it sounds, well, that's silly, but it matters. It's like, look, we set this tent up. It's that hang in the picture thing. Our, you know, isn't this cool? We got to do this together. So I think what I would say, Josh, is that I think it's useful for all people to get out and away from the hustle and bustle of life. And when we get away from the things that only man has created, and you get out into something that you're like, well, man didn't make this tree or this mountain. You got to kind of deal with that. When I'm surrounded by skyscrapers, I can wash away God because I didn't need him to do anything that I'm looking at.
Yeah. And I think the feedback I've received from being on some of these trips and hearing from the participants, and these are guys of all ages, of just like, that was the most life-changing trip. And they also appreciated just the fact that nobody was making fun of them to do it. And no, you know, we were walking through here's how you do this, here's how you do this, and just being out of your comfort zone so far out there, they come back and just ready to, like Mike was saying, they're kick the door down, man. They're ready to do something. It's just cool to see.
Yeah, I love to see groups come back that realize they lived in a very similar geographic area as one another, and they meet for discipleship now. They've just reached to meet and open the Bible together. And that's the kind of stuff that makes it worth it. And we're trying to stay small. I think that's important for people to know. We try to do trips 4 to 10 people. I mean, we're trying to build some relationships. I mean, I met Micah through this, or I got to know him through this, and he's a friend now, because we have those shared experiences, and it's unique. But he and I have different backgrounds and different interests and likes, but we bonded together in this one thing.
Yeah. Well, so. You have worked, I'm going to shift gears a little bit. You've done a lot of speaking and teaching in college ministry, with the millennials, you know, the dreaded millennials, everybody says. So can you give a little bit of insight on, talk about the millennials, you know, and your experience with them, and, you know, the things you really enjoyed working with them. I want to hear some positive stuff, you know.
I could bore everyone to death with this group, but look, they before this most recent generation were the largest generation in the history of the earth. A few years ago, I haven't gotten an updated number on this, but 4 years ago, half of the world's population was below the age of 24, and a third of the American population was. So I use that to tell churches, look, if you look across your congregation, you don't have a third of people below the age of 24, you're out of balance. That's not picking on anybody. That's just, hey, know where I'm at and what I need to be focused on. I think what's cool about the millennial group, different than, look, the great generation came back having seen things they should have never seen in war, and you know, grabbed their kids and wives and went to, took them to church, and they made a very rigid structure that was in the mold of having been in the military, and it worked tremendously. And then our generation came along, and unfortunately, or then the boomers came along, and they were large, but they ultimately came back to church once they started having families. They left for a while and came back. And then there was our generation, and we're kind of a lost, forgotten generation. If there's about 70 million boomers, there's about 30 million of us. And so we had a lot of spunk and passion, but we couldn't do anything with it. And we didn't make anything up. We lived with computers. We didn't make the computer. This group made up things like Facebook. They created it. And so the millennials were, you know, it depends on which study you look at, but anywhere from 80 to 100 million strong. And they weren't just strong numerically. They had that going for them, but they were strong in their creative capacity and ability. That was exciting to me from the standpoint of the church, because I was like, look, we got a group that has the technology, the passion, and the numbers to do something. And I just loved it. And I also found that they weren't against God. In fact, more of them believed in God than the previous two generations. And they were, I hear all the time, they don't give. Well, that's not statistically accurate. They do give. In fact, they give more than our generation does. And it's, they give differently. And here's the best way to describe that. Whereas my parents may have moved to a new town and joined a church in order to make friends, or joined an organization, they would join the YMCA to make friends, you know, playing racquetball. Millennials connect differently, and so do Gen Xers and Gen Zers. They connect differently, and here's what I mean. Millennials not going to walk into a church to try to make friends. They're skeptical of the organization. A millennial is going to wait till a friend invites them to an organization. So the organization's not the starting point for them. The organization is actually the culmination of a friendship. And that's the need for the organization, is it organizes my friendships, but it's not the place I find them.
So the big thing is we need to be inviting and just starting that invitation, and that'll result in reaching a lot more in that generation.
Oh, that's exactly right. That is the key, this relational connectivity that you hear about all the time, that you two are so good at. It's just this, hey, I have to befriend you before you'll trust me enough to come to my organization.
It's not like we'll put a big show on and they'll show up. Nope. It's different.
Field of dreams are over. In fact, in the architecture world in which I reside with churches, one of the main things that I focus on and that we talk to churches about and coach and teach churches is, man, that lobby area, that gathering space, the hallways are where these people connect. And so you can have a smaller worship area, but you better have a larger hallway and a larger lobby. And those are spaces that we used to kind of throw off as wasted space. And I'll say this to pastors pretty often. I'll say, how frustrated are you that your young couples don't come to service until midway through your sermon, or if at all? And every time they look at me like, how did you know that? And I'm like, because they've been outside talking. Now, they may have been around a monitor listening to what you're saying, but they were talking outside because this is how they connect with each other. And that's an okay thing. It's not personal to you. It's they're hearing from the Lord, but they're conversing. Another good way to put this, Josh, would be this. Our schools, what we're doing here is really set up as a download. Like, you have a larger database that downloads to, you know, other databases. In the millennials' case, they don't do well with downloading. They upload, meaning you got to give them a topic and let them talk it through, and they'll figure out what they meant or what's true.
Right. And sometimes I think we forget that those personal relationships take a long time. There is no instant gratification of, I'm going to know this person in 3 weeks. And because I've built a 3 week rapport with them, now I can talk about Jesus. I mean, sometimes it's years before they finally trust you enough to be like, okay, well, that guy is a lot different. And maybe that is because he's trying to, you know, he's trying to follow what the Bible says and be nice to everybody and not a jerk or whatever those things are. But, you know, that's 2 years later as opposed to, oh, well, I've been inviting this guy to church for 3 months and he's not coming, so I'm just going to give up on him.
Yes, I agree completely. And you know what? I don't like that long term. I mean, I want it now. Don't you see I'm kind? Don't you see I'm nice? Don't you see we connect? Jesus is real. Let's go. Let's do it.
I'm wasting all my time with you if you're not going to show, you know, that does. And, you know, I have some people that have never gone to a church, but when they are in a difficult spot or whatever, they'll direct, you know, they'll call me or text me or go, dude, I need you, you know, what do you think about this? And, you know, I still try to answer from a biblical answer to it or side of it. But at the same time, I'm not going to harp like, hey, why don't you go ahead and read John 6 because that'll help you in this situation. No, man, just I'm going to treat you because we built that bond and I don't care whether you go to church or not, really. But I'm going to show you how we should be acting or, you know, whatever.
Yeah,
that's good.
No, that's good.
Well, we got about a few minutes left, Nick. Hey, tell me, where do you think the church is going?
Thanks for asking, as if I had something valuable to say about it. I would say that I have always throughout my career that's been one of my strengths is being able to see trends, but also the people and kind of know and feel what's happening. I would say that this last year through COVID, for any of the reasons or rationales, right or wrong, that we got into it, I would say it's been the hardest time I've ever had trying to figure out what's happening in the church specifically. I mean, not only am I trying to lead men, not only am I trying to lead my kids, not only am I trying to lead, you know, church projects. It's just, hey, how do you give a thought to somebody about where this thing might be headed? Do we still build 1,000-seat auditoriums or do we not? You know, where are we headed? And so I don't know that I have an answer, Josh, but I think I appreciate you asking. I think what I could do is give you a couple of thoughts. And if they're of God, then digest them and thank him for them. And if they're not, throw them away aggressively into the spiritual trash can of your life, you know. But I would say this. I talked to a guy named Mark Driscoll, who some might know the name of at the beginning of the pandemic. And he had his hand and finger on the pulse of this much more than anybody else I've talked to, I think. That may be unfair, but he stands out to me. I remember him saying this, and I would term it this way. Do you remember when we were growing up, the big argument in the church was about music, really specifically the style? And I don't know about your churches, but I can speak to mine. It wasn't just the style. It was, is this right or wrong? I mean, an actual literal moral issue. It wasn't a stylistic issue. It was a moral one of these songs are wrong. And part of it was, hey, they don't have the same theology as the hymn. Well, that's accurate, sure. But we all loved them. You know, I liked them better than taking the old 70s rock songs and adding Jesus into them. You know, I liked them. I connected with them differently. And it was probably style that I connected to more than it was wording. Isn't it interesting that while there are still some that have that argument, none of us think about it anymore? And we just don't. It's not an argument. There's no argument left because it was never a moral standard. It was always a question of opinion or preference. And we Christians get into a lot of trouble when we continue to argue about our preferences. And we do that, but not all of us. I'm telling you, we get a bad rap. We don't all do that all the time, but we do get into trouble when we do. I think the online church has been an argument of preference. I don't get it. I'm a personal connectivity person. Doing a Zoom meeting is still hard for me a year later. I'd like to see I just like to be around people in person. But I would say Mark said this. Mark said, if your church doesn't have two lanes right now for people to ride on, then you're going to be left behind. He said, doesn't this fix the argument of is it okay to go to online church or not? Well, for me, there is no argument. I'm an in-person church guy. I mean, I have to be. And if I were leading a church right now, I would be hoping that our online could get people to come into the doors of my church, because I do think there is something spiritual about that. And I think that you can prove that easily through scripture. But I would say that he was right in that, you know, used to it argue about, like, can somebody go to church and online and still be connected? Well, I think all the churches voted this last year when we said, hey, you know what, we'll stop meeting for a while. And we really did vote. No matter what your reason or rationale, or if you thought it was right or wrong, we voted. And we all said we thought we could make it. And so there's the vote. And so I would say this, your churches need to find a way, and it doesn't have to be the leaders of the church, it can be the people in the church. But you got to find a way that you connect with people online and make small groups and discipleship times and teaching times for those people. And you got to have an in the room experience. You know, our online experience used to be, let us put a security camera in the corner of the room and you can watch. The pandemic kind of made us reminded of, you know what? We better have something catered to this group, because they're important and they matter. But we know they're in their living room, so why don't we talk to them like they're in their living room? And I think that that is an important thing of where the church is headed. I think that people are going to meet and connect in that way for quite some time, right or wrong. I think that's going to happen. And I also think, Josh, that I think that churches are going to get more interested in the outdoor space that we probably should have been building and maintaining for our cities all these years, parks and the baseball fields and places that in the next pandemic, we can still meet, quote, socially distanced. Mm-hmm. But those of us that would be like me that are in-person people, that I would hope everyone would be at some point, but that's me, you know, I think we're going to have to create those environments and those spaces that people that are double masking and walk around with hand sanitizer on their helmet that dispenses every 30 seconds. We can say, oh, they're stupid, or we can provide a place for them to reach them. And I'm more interested in providing a place that people can come meet my Jesus. That's what I want to do.
Yeah. So can church leaders, elders, deacons, whatever, just who have any questions kind of about this, can they reach out to you in your capacity, you know, at Park Hill, just to brainstorm some of this out and talk it out? And how do they reach you?
Yeah, I'd love for them to do that. I don't pretend to be the one that has the largest database, but I know a lot of people that have bigger databases, and I love just kind of disseminating information and being even a pass through and a pass between. But idiscipleministries.com is the website for our adventure ministries. Love for anybody listening to show up and come to one. You can get on there and find out more information there. And then parkhill.com is the company that I work for and that I minister with now. And so if anybody is thinking of where's the church going and what do we need to be doing as a church, we would love to sit down and have that conversation anywhere coast to coast. We work from coast to coast. We have a church in DC and working on one in California as well. So it's a joy and an honor, and I'd love to be able to sit down with anybody. Parkhill.com is how you can reach us there.
Nick, we're out of time, and we didn't get to cover many more things, so maybe we'll swing you back in again. But
yeah, we'll thank do you Nick for, Cooper number two.
That's right. So thank you for making time today. I think we all learned a lot and gained a lot of wisdom. And are you hopeful? Are you hopeful for the church for the future? I just want to end on that.
I am. I'm incredibly hopeful, not just from a generational statistical standpoint, but man, we're being forced to innovate. And we've got innovative people. I mean, God is the inventor of innovation. Look at it, and you can know that if you're walking in the Spirit, he's going to have some seriously cool ideas for the church moving forward. And we're in a time where those ideas are being listened to. So yeah, I think the future's bright. Could be rocky for some, but I think there's going to be a lot of people meet Jesus because we were innovative.
Mm. Thank you for that. Thanks for joining us today, Nick. We look forward to following you and iDisciple.
Thanks for what you guys are doing. This is cool. Thanks for having me on.
You bet.
Hey, this is Micah. Me and Josh would like to thank you for joining us in the Story Field today. We hope you've enjoyed our discussion, and to learn more about us and the Story Field, visit thestoryfield.com. This podcast is sponsored by The Allen Firm, legal guides for many of life's situations. To learn more about The Allen Firm, visit allenlawfirm.com. Have a blessed day, week, and year, and we will see you next time on the Story Field.
This is Josh again. I just wanted to thank you for listening and let you know that this podcast is really about hope and about giving you hope for your life. So if you're listening and you're in a place where you're really feeling hopeless right now, or if you do not know Jesus, we have some great news to share with you and would love a chance to pray for you. Email us at hope@allenlawfirm.com. That's hope@allenlawfirm.com, and we'll reach out to you soon. Thank you for listening. God bless you.